Last week, I promised that this weekend I would talk about hope, so I'm making good on my promise, okay? As you know, hope is one of the three theological virtues, faith, hope, and love, right? Faith, hope, and love. St. Paul says lots of things about hope. He says, in hope we were saved. He says that these three things endure, faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love. Doesn't mean that the other two aren't important. It's just that in his ranking of them, love is the most important, and faith and hope are right behind. For a rich person, there's no need to wait for anything nowadays. If a rich person wants some product, they can order it, buy it, and he can have it, like, immediately. Those who don't have as much money can't. They've got to sort of, like, save up, or they have to maybe hope to win the lottery or something in order to have, you know, the same sort of thing that a rich person can just go and buy. Similarly, we can hope that the package we ordered is in today's mail. We can hope that it's coming today, but it might come tomorrow. Then we have to hope for the next day for it to come, you know. But then, if we, as you so often can nowadays, and I know this is Christmas season, maybe people have bought things online or have ordered things by mail, and they send you a tracking number, and you can see where it is right now, so you're tracking it across. You know exactly when it'll arrive. In that case, you don't hope for it, because you know exactly when it's going to come. It's going to be here at this time, on this day, and there's no hoping, there's just waiting. The rich person might not have to hope, but he might have to wait. The poor person might have to hope and wait. The person waiting for the mail, not knowing when things might come or if it's coming, hopes. The person who knows when it's going to be and where it is. Hope, as far as who we are as Christians, hope is, in the words of one of the books I was reading, preparing for this, hope is receptivity. Hope is being receptive. Hope is being willing to receive something or someone. It's the active waiting and welcoming of the package that's coming, or of a person that's coming to dinner or whatever. You know they're coming. You invited them. You hope and you wait for them. Or even of a baby. You hope and you wait for the baby to be born. Hope is that openness, that just simply being receptive, having your hands open. How did our predecessors, the Israelites, they hoped for freedom from slavery when they were enslaved in Egypt, and they eventually got it. They followed Moses and hoped for the promised land, and eventually they got it. Now, in that case, there was a lot of temptation to drop that hope, to just stop being open to the gift of what was coming, the gift of the promised land. You know, they're told, the promised land is coming, we're going to get there, it's coming, we hope for it. And some people just wanted to give up on the hope and turn around and go back to Egypt and say, you know what, life is better in slavery. But that's a hopeless sort of outlook. They wanted to drop the hope that they were given. Moses, for his part, did his best to keep the hope alive in them, and eventually they reached promised land, they got there. The Israelites were later on in exile in Babylon and hoped to be able to go back to Jerusalem and hoped to be able to rebuild the temple. And eventually they did. Every hope they had a fulfillment. But for the Jews, these are earthly hopes and earthly fulfillments. What about Christian hope? Our hope has two parts. Jesus is the fulfillment of our hope. He is the Messiah that was hoped for. He was... You know, they said God had prophesied through some of the prophets, you will get a Messiah, I will send him to you. Jesus comes. So he's the fulfillment of a hope. John asks today, are you the one? Are you the one that we are hoping for? Are you the one that we've been patient for? That we've been being patient for? Are you the one we've been waiting for? Are you the end point of our hope? Once you got the Messiah, that hope is fulfilled. You don't have hope anymore. You have the thing, or the person, in this case, Jesus. And yes, Jesus is that one. The answer to John's question is yes, but Jesus doesn't just say it because he's kind of talking poetry. Even now, though, we can continually hope for Jesus' coming. Even though he came 2,000 years ago, we have this whole season of leading up to Christmas because we can still hope for Jesus' coming because there's still sort of places in the world and aspects of the world that don't have that sort of that touch of Jesus in them. We can hope for Jesus' coming into those situations, into those damaged aspects of the world, even into the lives of our families as a guest, as one of those people that becomes adopted into a family, that becomes a friend and a part of our families. We can hope for that coming to continually happen, for Jesus to continue to come with his power, with his help, and with his direction. So that's the first part. I said it's a two-part hope that Christians have. Second, with Jesus, we're also given a new hope. We're given a new something to look forward to. Before, there was no expectation for the Jewish people of an afterlife. Pope Benedict, in his letter on hope, in some way, we want life itself, true life, untouched by death. There is a hope, sort of like within us, that we just don't want to die. Of course, we want perfect life, no death. We want the no death version of life. That's the hope that Jesus brings and says, "Here, hold on to this hope, and when you hold on to this hope, it will come. Not yet, but it will come." Before hope, before Jesus, there was no hope of like the complete restoration of a broken world, of in some way rediscovering Eden or getting Eden back, the Garden of Eden. But with Jesus, that is also a new hope that is given to us. Here, take these two new hopes. That we're going to get Eden back. You're going to have life that doesn't have that death aspect to it. Hold on to both of those hopes, and they will come. Jesus says, "I'm going to go prepare a place for you, and I'll come back, and I'll come back and get you." It's one of those readings that we read at funerals often. We look forward to these fulfillments. But just like the poor person in comparison to the rich person, these are out of our control. We don't just wait. You know, we wait for Jesus, who has the ability to fulfill them. So if a travel agent promises you to send you to paradise, to some sort of Eden, they're lying to you. As beautiful as it might be in Tahiti or whatever, it is not Eden. It is not perfect. It may be beautiful, but it is not perfect. Or if a doctor or a pharmaceutical company has a plan for making you live forever, don't buy it, because they can't fulfill that hope for us. We've got the hope, but they do not have the fulfillment. They do not have the power to fulfill either of those. Only Jesus does. In fact, over the course of like the history of monasticism, of monks and nuns living in monasteries in Egypt or in Europe or in America, whatever, many people believe that to run away to a monastery and live in Christian brotherly and sisterly love with these other Christians would be something akin to a new Eden. It'll all be perfect there. I'll just go there and I will escape the world, and that'll be great. It'll be like this new paradise that we'll build on earth. But those people who went looking for that were soon disappointed. Many of them left. Yes, it's a different way of life living in a monastery, and it is an intentional Christian community, but it's still filled with imperfect human beings, and personalities clash, and sins happen there just as much. And there's, you know, it can be a difficult sort of life. In fact, I had a classmate at the seminary. He lived in a Trappist monastery for a year before I ever met him, and he was discerning if he should join this monastery, and maybe his vocation was going to be tied up, and he was going to live his life with them in that monastery. But it wasn't for him. His description of the place was he had this southern drawl. He just said, "It's like a bad blue-collar job." It was not the place for him, and it was not perfect. He may have gone into it kind of starry-eyed, but even if it wasn't his vocation, it is the life. It is the vocation for many other people. But he was in some way looking for a heavenly hope to be fulfilled on earth, but it doesn't work that way. It will be fulfilled in heaven, not here. And this sort of brings you to an important point. This hope is possible even in the face of death. Even Jesus can decide to be hopeful while dying on the cross, even if he begins to feel emotionally, you know, a little bit abandoned. And following Jesus' example, the Christian martyrs continue to exemplify this, because they know that they are not hoping for a long life on earth. That's not their hope. They're not hoping for any sort of earthly prestige or to be the richest or the most popular king or whatever. they know that the hopes that they hold on to have a fulfillment elsewhere. And so even if they're being killed, they go, that's okay, because the fulfillment is not here on this earth anyway. Jesus is going to provide it somewhere else. G.K. Chesterton wrote, it's kind of a long quote. He wrote, "Hope is the power of being cheerful in circumstances which we know to be desperate. The virtue of hope exists only in earthquake and eclipse. For practical purposes, it is at the hopeless moment that we require the hopeful man. And the virtue either does not exist at all, or it begins to exist at that moment. Exactly at the instant when hope ceases to be reasonable, it begins to be useful." I love that quote, that last part especially, because it's in, hope is useless unless we can hope for lots of things. Oh, I hope I have dinner tonight. Well, no, I probably will, but it'll be fine. I hope for lots of things. And we say I hope sort of not, sometimes we misuse the word hope. But it is in those desperate and impossible moments where hope seems, as Chesterton says, unreasonable, that it's really a useful virtue to have. No matter the circumstances, we can have hope that God will be our salvation, because hope remains forever as a capacity of ours, an openness of ours, with our hands open, to receive God as our salvation.